Hello and welcome to another episode of Solo BG Podcast, episode 124. And here is the yearly Gen Gun special episode. If this is your first time in the podcast, as always, welcome. And if this is not your first time in the podcast, well, I hope you stay to enjoy, once again, the yearly Gen Gun episode where I tell you basically my impressions and, you know, the highlights of this unique edition of Gen Gun, which, you know, it was unique in many, many, many ways. In the past, we have done some different variants of these episodes with, you know, interviews around the convention, so on and so forth, with guests as well. But this time, we're going to do it just a little bit different. This Gen Con, we approach a different way of doing this episode, so I hope you enjoy. And like always, let's start in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Solo BG Podcast. In this podcast, we talk about solo and cooperative games. We also bring you news, audio unboxings, Kickstarter updates, and interviews with amazing personalities around the industry. We hope you enjoy this episode. And now, here's your host, Derek Rodriguez.
Well, like now is a tradition here in the podcast. I want to start by saying hi to all of you amazing listeners around the world that were so kind to listen to the last episode, which actually was the preview to Gen Con, the list that I prepared for Gen Con, and all the games that I thought I was going to either play or buy. And of course, it was a long list if you were able to check that episode out. So I will tell you the spoiler alert, I didn't get to obtain all the games or buy all the games. I didn't get to demo all of them. But I will walk you through my highlights and the games that I actually got to play, the games that I brought home, and we go from there, right? So I want to say hi to, first, all the countries: United States in number one, United Kingdom, Canada, Germany, Spain, Australia, Netherlands, Mexico, Sweden, and Greece. Those were the top countries I listened to the last episode, so thank you so much. There was a total of 55 different countries, actually, according to our servers. Cities, there was a total of 763 cities, which is crazy. Thank you so much for all of you amazing listeners. In first place, it was Melbourne, Victoria, Sydney, New South Wales, Chicago, Illinois, Frankfurt, Seattle, Cambridge, Massachusetts, Brighton, and Hove. Madrid, Guadilla, also in Madrid, and Minneapolis, Minnesota. Thank you so much to the top cities, as well as, once again, among the 763 cities that they listened to the last episode. Anyway, once again, thank you for being here, and I hope you enjoyed, like I mentioned in the introduction. And we're going to go back in time, like always, and we're going to jump into the DeLorean and go back to what we talked on episode number 24, which it was published on April 21st of 2019. A little bit just before all the chaos during the pandemic, right? So if you listen to the barking on the background, I'm sorry, my dogs are going crazy. But anyway, so back then we talk about Teotihuacan, City of Gods, which the Kickstarter, as today, which is the recording date, we are recording on a night of Tuesday, August 22nd. And as today, the pledge manager, all the campaign ended for Teotihuacan, City of Gods, where we were able to basically pledge the new edition of the game with a new art and a more vivid game board. Also, the pledge included all the expansions. And also, you were able to get the neoprene mats if you're like me, like a huge fan of neoprene mats, where you were able to obtain those. Now, did I back that with everything? No, I did not, actually. Actually, one of the things, the nice things of this campaign was that they included a big box for you to store everything from the game, and in a very cool art. And I didn't back, actually, the neoprene mats, you know, the pledge with the neoprene mats, which is surprising, but I have a reason for that. I run out of space, actually, of storaging neoprene mats efficiently and kind of like nicely on my game room, so I just will just hate to, you know, put them on storage or something like that. And then, you know, I have too many boxes at this point, and there's only so much that you can storage in a nicely display, I guess, way among the game rooms, because if you are like me, I tend to sometimes, because of the amounts of games that I purchase and that I kindly receive from publishers, sometimes I start to storage them, And when I don't see the games in my gaming room, it's more than likely that those games will keep being without being played. And time will go by, and unfortunately, once in a while, I will remember that I own them. And now it's kind of like too late, because, of course, you keep getting games and keep getting, you know, whatever is around the hype and, you know, whatever is new and so on. As you know, the real problems for most of our gamers. So, or us, the gamers, I'm sorry. So, yeah, that's one thing. So, because of that, I decided not to back the Pledge of the Nibiru match, but everything else, I'm very excited to receive. Teotihuacan, City of Gods, is actually a game that by Daniel Tassini, I believe, and Simone Luciani. I hope I'm not doing any mistake here with the designers. I know it's from the Italian guys. And also the solo mode made by Debbie Tursi, which with the solo mode, I'm not a huge fan of it, honestly, for that particular game. But the multiplayer way to play that game, I'm a huge fan of it. So it plays well two players, it plays well three players, and four players. So I'm looking forward to, you know, get the new edition, getting into the table. Once again, if you have heard the previous episodes, and if you know me as a gamer, one of the things that I like, basically from every production and every game, is actually the visual aspect. And that's why sometimes I tend to be a little bit away from some Euro games, just because they have like a very, you know, sometimes very flat art, very, you know, classic, kind of like opaque or pale colors art. So when we have Euros that they have very vivid art, well, I'm a huge fan, and you know, I'm always looking to try them and play them and potentially own them. So that's the case with Teotihuacan. I mean, of course, I own it not only because the game was good, but also because the pre-Hispanic theme of it, and of course, me being Mexican, well, that's a plus. But now I'm more excited because with that new art, well, I'm looking forward to. Anyway, that was us taking the time machine back to episode number 24, and now we are here, or here we are, 100 episodes later. I want to also thank to all the publishers that are making this episode possible. And while I go and look for them, I want to tell you that they were a big part of our highlights of Gen Con, because I met with so many great people, you know, so many great publishers and marketing, you know, personalities around the industry, I guess you want to call it. Also some, you know, content creators and friends. As Mark Dainty from Not Board Gaming. I mean, as I say hi to, you know, Mark. He has a great YouTube channel, which, of course, is about solo games. So you should check it out once again, Not Board Gaming. I was very happy to finally meet in person with him. During the pandemic, we became, you know, I guess closer friends online. And we actually play Undaunted, you know, via Skype with cameras and everything. Like, literally at the worst, at the most critical time during the pandemic, which it was, like, not going out. And it was one of my best epic plays from Undaunted by Debbie Thompson. So I got the opportunity to meet Mike from Not Board Gaming. So anyway, Not Board Gaming. So I want to say hi to, you know, Mark, and also invite you to go and check him out on YouTube. Now, a special huge thanks to Gambling Games for, you know, showing us Tiny Epic Vikings. And we actually brought a copy home, so I'm looking forward to try it and tell you all about it. Also, they gave us a new game, The Last Kingdom, the board game, which I haven't seen the show. It's a show on Netflix. Probably you have seen it. I haven't. But they have a board game that it's kind of like, you know, Blood Rage type of area control thing. So I'm looking forward to try it. It looks pretty cool. And by the way, one of the highlights I will spoil you right now from Gambling Games is that they had a majestic booth on Gen Con. I mean, that thing was amazing and very impressive and also immersive. You know, it was like a huge castle, and they will display their games, and you were able to walk in, and it was just beautiful, very nicely done by Gambling Games. Also, to Daywalker Syndicate, these publisher were very kind as well to provide a copy of a game that I will tell you a little bit about in a little bit. So, huge thanks also to them. Good Games Publishing as well. Pandasaurus Games, they were fantastic. You know, Raina, she is the marketing person from Pandasaurus. She showed me a very, you know, a very interesting game that is coming up soon on September. So, I think on September, October anyway. But a very interesting two-player game I will tell you more about in a little bit. Japanime Games, thank you so much also. To Pegasus Spiel as well for so many great games that they were having on their booth. Such as The Beast, First Rad, among the great, you know, collection of games that they have to offer. Also to Red Ribbon Games, Alderac Entertainment Games, of course, to my good friend Vladimir Orellana, who kindly inviting us to the content creator party from AEG. And of course, they were showing us the upcoming novelties, which I will tell you a little bit what's coming up from AEG as well. Green Beer Games, as always, supporting. They provide us a copy of a game that, you know, it's kind of an oldie at this point, I guess, but I'm interested to try it. Sorry, once again, for the marking. It's a cooperative game, Dreams and Shadows. So that's by Green Beer Games. So thank you so much also for them. They were great at the convention. Flying Frog Productions as well, you know, Flying Frog Productions, which is this fantastic publisher where you have, you know, real people on their game, actors and models and such. So it's very, very, very unique the way that they do things. Nice booth. I mean, they had displayed all these mini, you know, painted minis and terrain and for Shadows and Brimstone, which was a big hit. They were, you know, they were releasing Valley of the Serpent Kings, which is one of the newest games that I think is coming out to retail in September. But it looks great on their booth. And once again, miniatures painted all over around, you know, Dungeon Crawler to its core. They have a lot of variety on their games. And once again, the unique thing is the art, which is real people. So that's always unique and different, right? Yuke's Synapse Games, of course, with my friend Carl Breer. He is, I believe, and I could be wrong, but I think he's the CEO or president of the company. They started way, probably 4 years ago, 4 Gen Cons ago, back when I met them with their first game, Incubation. Which is a very cute, nice produced game about dinosaurs and you know, incubing the dinosaur eggs. So anyway, and actually we did an episode about it, I think, very early in the podcast. But I had the opportunity to finally meet with Carl in person. And we talk about a lot of games that are coming up. And I will tell you a little bit about the games. Huge thanks to IV Studios or IV Games. They are the publisher from Mythic Mischief, which is a great game, which for me, it's almost a 5 out of 5, very tactical. It has a solo mode that it works great. And now we are looking forward to try Moonrakers. So thank you so much. Sedge Game Editions, of course, you know, Lost Ruins of Arnak, they're coming up with a new expansion. I will tell you a little bit more in a little bit. Adam Apples Games, thank you so much for supporting the show as well. It was great to see you guys there. And to First Fish Games as well, which currently they have a Kickstarter campaign going on called Mistwind. So you might want to check that out. It also seems like a very straightforward, nice, competitive game. So huge thanks to also First Fish Games. And thanks to all these publishers that I mentioned, because thanks to you guys, this episode can exist. All right. With that being said, let's start with the highlights of the Gen Con. There's a lot to talk, and I'm going to try to condense everything in a nutshell. And let's start with the elephant in the room, Lorcana. Oh my God. My experience with Lorcana, and this is what is going to be calling this segment of the episode. My Lorcana experience. Here we go. So, I get there. I usually get there on every Gen Con, like a Thursday, like at 8:30 a.m., you know, ready to rock and roll with all the hype, with the emotions of the anticipation of a whole year waiting for the best 4 days of the year in relation to gaming experience, right? And I just love Gen Con. This is going to be, I started going to Gen Con since 2016. So you're talking about 16, 17, 18, 19, 21, 22, 22. So this is my eighth Gen Con. And it's always anticipation, of course, of the excitement of walking through there and just breathing the atmosphere of so many new games and the hype around and you know, all these people and because we say all these people, my experience with Lorcana. So I met with my friend Jonathan over there. I usually, you know, started the con with him, and we both excited about Lorcana. We know we want to go for Lorcana. We hear about Lorcana, and you know, I hear like good things. But of course, the main core of Lorcana is the franchise that is behind is Disney. You know, so who doesn't like Disney, right? And of course, when you look at the art online and the preview card from many, you know, other conventions where they were handing promos around, which I will tell you, I will talk about that in a little bit. They all look great, you know, going back to the classic Disney films. So anyway, we open our magazines, you know, that they are provided through Gen Con to find out the map where Ravensburger booth is going to be. and we look, we locate it, and then we, okay, you know, among the sea of people, we try to be as close as that door, you know, innocent from us, to try to, you know, be in line sooner rather than later. It's about 9:55 a.m., 9:56 a.m., 9:57 a.m., 9:58, and then the doors start to open. And of course, as you have seen, most likely on YouTube and Instagram, so many places where you can see pictures and clips and videos about, you know, this sea of people walking in through the convention. More than 70,000 attendees this year, which I think it was a record. There was a sold out 4-day badges. There was a sold out on Saturday badges. So I didn't experience this kind of crowd since GenCon 50. And I think this feel more crowded, and it was probably because the previous two editions of GenCon, they were post pandemic and restrictions and vaccinations and masks, and that pushed back some people and took some people away, because whatever beliefs they want to have, and I respect that, you know, either no masks, no vaccination, whatever the case is, they decided not to attend to GenCon. Also, some publishers didn't attend to GenCon on those 2 years, but it feel more relaxed. Yes, it was kind of unique experience, I will say it. You know, walking around with the mask, and it was hot in August here in Indianapolis. But, you know, I mean, it was kind of nice, to be honest, to be able to walk, you know, kind of like freely. But anyway, I'm not going to deviate from the subject. But, you know, we walk, Jonathan and I, as we go through the sea of people. And we get to the Ravensburger booth. And then it's like, okay, that's sort of like the line. It goes around the corner. And then you surround the whole booth, and then you keep walking, 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 walking. And eventually, that line take you outside to the main hall of the convention, but outside of the exhibition hall, right? Which is where you can do all your purchases. And then, you know, the line keeps going, and finally we get in line, not too far away from that door. And then, little by little, we start to see behind us, like, crazy, crazy amount of people getting in line as well. And I don't know if you have been in the convention in the Indianapolis Convention Center, but that place is huge. So if you are related to you know, if you have been in GenCon at some point, basically from one of the entrance doors from the convention center all the way almost to the street, to almost to Georgia Street, which is where the block party usually used to happen. Now they move it to another around the block, close to the Lucas Oil Stadium, where the Colts from the NFL, you know, play. But anyway, it was going all the way to the street, right? So it was crazy. And then we're standing there for about 2 hours. So at this point, of course, I have all my list of anticipated games that I told you in the previous episode. And 10:30 comes by, 11 comes by. And at that point, I also have an appointment with publishers. And I literally told Jonathan, you know what? I'm gonna go to an appointment and I'll be back. And if the line starts to move, well, you know, my loss or whatever. Well, long story short, I went, did purchases, went, come back to appointments. I come back, it's like almost noon at that point. 2 hours of GenCon lost, which for me is like treasure, you know, just for being in line for Lorcana. And then, you know, people start to hand some promos, and you know, there's a promo, which is, in my opinion, is kind of like crazy, which is one of the cards that you can find on Lorcana, but it has like a tiny, 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 tiny GenCon logo at the bottom. That's it. It doesn't do anything else, not foil or anything. No, just tiny logo of GenCon on the bottom. Anyway, as the line starts to move, then, you know, they had like a few options for you to buy there. They have the starters set. They had some neoprene mats. They have some deck boxes. And they have the boosters box, right? So, you know, where everybody on the line was like, well, what are you going to get? Well, I'm going to get some starters in the Wicked Sword Blade game. I'm going to get some neoprene mats. Of course, Derek wants some neoprene mats. Started making plans, you know, like very, very childish and ingeniously, I guess, from us. Because at some point, the disorganization goes crazy. And then people from GenCon and from the Ravensburger booth come and say like, hey, you know what? We're out of everything except booster boxes, right? That's it. So that was the first red flag in my experience, right? So then I told Jonathan, do you think we should get the booster box? And he's like, yes. I mean, let's do it. So we finally get to the booth. At this time, this point is probably like what, like maybe 12:30 or 1 p.m. We finally get our booster boxes, and that's it. That's it, right? That's it for Lorcana. What is interesting though is that the line never ended for the whole day of the convention, right? It never ended. Almost towards the end, I think it ended finally. It was so unorganized from Ravensburger, I think, on my perspective, right? I don't think they were, in a way, okay. People are saying, well, they were not prepared for the amount of people and amount of stock and all that stuff. But for me, is that, okay, you've been creating the hype for this game at least for a year, at least, all right? So at that point, when you start to announce the game, more than likely, you have the rights for the franchise already purchased and all the rights and everything, right? So we're talking about a year in advance. Now, previous to that, before you start with the hype and before you start with the announcements and stuff like that, more than likely, a few months prior to that, or weeks at least, you had the agreement with the whoever has the rights of distributing that license and you know, from Disney pretty much, right? So you add more time to that. Thirdly, it's like, this is not a board game where you are making or producing miniatures. This is a card game. And from me talking to different, you know, publishers, cards are usually the cheapest and more accessible way to do things. That's why deck building games are always a huge success, you know, more than likely profitable in when they do crowdfunding, because they don't have to invest on minis or cardboard or anything. It's just literally cards, and that's it, right? Of course, you have the process of, you know, making the art and making sure that everything produces or it's being manufactured in a good way and no mistakes on the text and the cards and so on and so forth. But that usually, you know, with a big of a company, you will filter out quite of early on the production stage. And also, to my understanding, is that this game was designed already pretty much the whole game, because actually there was some legal actions from Upper Deck towards the designer and towards Ravensburger, allegedly that this designer already did, basically this design was already made for Upper Deck, for an Upper Deck game. So it was all these things that, you know, it makes me wonder, like, Ravensburger probably didn't prepare with the amount of stock, and people are like, well, but they couldn't, there's no way they could have, forecast this situation, right? Well, I'm sorry, you've been hyping this game for a year. All the pre-order places had it sold out in seconds and minutes. You have to be prepared with the stock, with enough stock for the convention. Now, I understand that is part of the marketing strategy, or some companies do it as a marketing strategy, of creating this demand. You know, like, let's make this in shortage production and let's keep some games, you know, apart from the public. In that way, we can, in a certain way, and this is a strategy that some marketer companies do to create that hype, which is fine. But to me, what I'm saying is, like, this organization, as far as, like, you know, in the past, in some games in Gen Con, I don't recall which ones, but for example, you will be in line and they will hand up tickets. Like, okay, we know that we have, I don't know, 1,000 starter decks, right? And we're only allowing every customer to buy just one. Well, we're going to keep tickets. Hey, we're going to ask on the line, are you getting a starter deck? Are you getting a starter deck? Ticket, 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 ticket. There you go. What are you getting? I'm getting neoprene mat. Ticket. Okay, in that way, at that point, okay, people, from these people, all the remaining ones, we're out of this. If you want to stay, just for this. But you tell them, at the beginning of the convention, in that way, you don't have them wasting their time to begin with. Secondly, you avoid the chaos around the convention, which, once again, this is not your problem. This is Gen Con organization problem, but at the same time, you're causing it. So it was just, in my opinion, kind of crazy. Now, I could be speaking very ignorantly, and so probably you on the other side of the speaker could tell me, like, Derek, well, you are wrong in this and this and that. But once again, I'm just giving you my perspective from someone that has some as well knowledge in marketing and manifacturing and so on and so forth. But anyway, so that was kind of my first approach the first day. And then the second day, well, the craziness, it was at the end of the first day, Ravensburger announced that you could be in line at 6 p.m. for the next day, basically, and stay overnight. Which, to me, with all the respect, that's super crazy. And we're kind of guilty, and I include myself because I was in line, we're kind of guilty of this, you know? Like, I saw some posts online where there was, like, you know, people, like, we don't have to be, someone say it, like, I'm basically quoting at this point, I mean, but, like, kind of like behaving like animals, you know, like, be in line for one thing and making this product to be that hype. I think in a big part, we're guilty, right? So anyway, some people were in line every single day at 6 p.m., you know, for get the game next day at 10 a.m., which it was crazy. It was my first time seeing cops, police officers around the convention, probably in a part because all this chaos, and in a part because also this Gen Con was unique because there was a situation where on Wednesday, $300,000 worth of Magic cards were stolen. Literally, two guys just walk away from the convention center with a pallet of boxes of Magic cards. And in total, you know, it's around $300,000. And the worst thing is that these two people are also gamers. And even worse, I think one of them is a board game designer. And I think they were showing their game or their prototype on Gen Con, which that's all, you know, super crazy. Now, these are the person of interest. They allegedly people that, according to the cameras, and they were identified, are responsible for this theft. But, you know, that's important. Side of point. Another unique thing from this Gen Con. So the whole Arcana thing was just crazy and chaotic. Then I hear rumors that I don't know if they're true or not, but there's a program called VIG, which is Very Important Gamer, and also, you know, that you can pay, I don't know the amount, but it's a crazy amount of money, which, hey, you have it, good for you, just spend it for that, right? So that basically allows you to come earlier to the exhibition hall, in that way you can kind of like, you know, buy with the convention center kind of being alone just for you. And there was a lot of people from that particular program just in line for Lorcana. There was also the rumor that, you know, usually, and this is a fact, usually before the 10 a.m. Sales start, an hour before, an hour and a half before, they let the exhibitors and people working around the booths to go and do their purchases, since they're going to be working, demoing games, so on and so forth. Well, of course, there were the rumors that, of course, all these people went and buy multiple things from the booth. And also, they were like raising the price or scalping the price, I guess, if you want to call it, on some of the other booths around the convention. So the scalping thing on eBay is going crazy. The promo, you know, just the promo card, one promo card, which is the one that they were handed at Gen Con, you could find it or sell it on eBay around $100, $150, even more expensive during the convention. So right now, Lorcana, I mean, you all know it's crazy. Now, talking about the game, and to close or to wrap up this Lorcana section of the episode, talking about the game, what do I think? Well, at this point, after Gen Con, you know, we played it, my wife and I, we really liked it. It's very friendly, very, you know, it's very easy to make synergies, very nice and fun deck building. And we went to another event here in Indianapolis, Indiana. Well, in a small town close to Indianapolis, Greenfield, Indiana, to a great, great game store, which, by the way, if you're local or if you're around, I think it's called Hitherto Coffee and Games. A very nice coffee shop, and the games are fantastic. They're a great selection of games for sale. Anyway, they have an event, and we went, my wife and I, with the twins. Of course, it was kind of chaotic, but we ended up getting another booster box and some starter decks as well. And now we have a lot of, probably 95% of the first chapter collection of Lorcana, with a lot of multiple commons and so on and so forth. We've been playing, we were building our decks, and it's a very, very, very fun game. My only experience with TCGs in the past, it was with Magic, and also not in a very, you know, in deep way. I mean, I just very casual. But with Magic, I always struggle with some rules and you know, abilities in the cards and so on and so forth. This one is pretty straightforward. It looks, it plays nicely. I mean, basically, is you know, we are these sort of like wizards, I guess, if you want to call Illuminators, which basically we're trying to obtain. We're trying to go on a quest and obtain 20 lore or victory points, if you want to see it. And basically, we are getting all these characters from the Disney universe, and we have to draw them in the way we can do things with them, as challenge other characters and quest to you know, spend lore to get those points, basically. And the way you do it is like you play cards. Some cards will go to your inkwell, which that will be like the main resource of the game. And you will use your ink from your inkwell to bring characters, actions, and items down. Even sing songs from the Disney universe, which that's pretty cool. But then when you play them on that round, you more than likely won't be able to use it unless certain ability on the cards, such as Rush. but you won't be able to use them, and because the ink will be fresh, if that makes sense. Then on your next turn, that ink will dry, and now those characters can do their actions and quest and challenge, and which basically challenge means fight other opponents, right? The game can play from 2 to 4 players. I think 2 is the sweet spot for the game. Sorry for the dog again. But it plays great. So with all things considered, I love Lorcana, and I think for me the game, it's easily... if I have to rate it a 5 out of 5, because it's a great game. So far, I've been loving it. Everything surrounding the game has been probably creating a lot of hype. Well, not probably, it's definitely creating some hype. At the same time, for some people, it have hurt the game. But, in general, I think it's a beautiful game and a great game. And I think it has, a lot of future. People were discussing, do you think it's going to be like Magic? Do you think it's going to overthrow Pokemon and Magic? Or maybe Yu-Gi-Oh. I mean, I don't know, but I can see this game being there, being live for at least 15 to 20 years, if not more. So yeah, that was my wrap up on Lorcana, and let's keep going with the episode now that we wrap up, this, and let's talk about games. Okay, one of the first highlights of the Gen Con was my, meeting with Synapse Games because they were able to show me their new game, Pyramido. And Pyramido, it's a great game that is 2 to 4 players. It's going to be released on September the 1st of 2023. It was released in the convention, but you're going to find it in the stores in 2023. And it's a very unique tile placement game. The game, when they were showing to me, basically you have dominoes, that you're going to be placing, and the dominoes will have 2 colors, and you just have to place them. The only rule is that dominoes, they have to attach to each other by a complete, side, so you cannot be like corner to corner. No, it has to be like just like a domino game. So when we start to play the first round of the game, it kind of like, when I was playing, I told this to Carl, I was like, well, this is just like King Domino or Queen Domino, but just ignoring that you have to match the colors, right? Like, you just place the domino. And he was like, well, but hold on, this is the catch. So basically what you do after the first round, you're going to get more dominoes, but now you're going to place them or tile place them with the same rules, but now leaving the edge of the previous dominoes or the area edge, to put more dominoes on top of them. Then eventually you will do the same for the third level, and then eventually for the fourth level. And that way you will build your pyramid, but all the tiles that previously were placed from the bottom levels that are on the borders, they will help you to score points. So that was a unique twist that I didn't expect it. But at the same time, it worked very smoothly and very easy, and he made the game completely different to the ones that I compared to. You're trying to build a pyramid. Basically, that's what it is. You have some jewels, some symbols that you're going to mark some areas with. Every time that you place a domino, you're going to place 1 jewel of that color. If you don't have one, well, you don't place one. But there's also going to be some printed jewels on the dominoes. And you basically, at the end of each round, you're going to score how many of those you get. And then you're also going to score for the minority, which is a bonus. And then you keep going level after level. It plays super fast. Probably a 2-player game will be like 20 minutes or so, 25 minutes. And then at the end of the game, whoever has more points wins the game. It has 90 unique dominoes. And the interesting thing about this game is that it's going to be available in 22 different languages, which is crazy. And I told my friends at Synapse Games that I love that because that tells us that they're doing a lot for the hobby. 22 different languages. So this game will be available basically everywhere in the world. It took a year in development when I was talking to them and you know, inquiring about the game. It's basically language independent though as well. So I love that. So this game, you can play it literally with someone that doesn't speak your language. As long as they understand the game, you're good to go. So that's always unique and lovely. I think it's a game that is good for non-gamers. But also very good to strategic gamers, because once again, if you're a gamer, you will be familiar probably with Queen Domino, King Domino, all those type of tile placement games. But this one has a nice twist of now we're going up in different levels, and that literally plays a part on planning this strategy for the remaining of the levels and the running of rounds. And you're gonna be scoring round to round. Once again, at the end of the game, you know, whoever scores more victory points will be the winner. So that was a nice highlight of Pyramido. I actually was excited because they were saying also the neoprene mats. But the neoprene mats, I was hoping to have like a, maybe, you know, like a center of the board neoprene mat, but it wasn't like that. So that kind of like pushed me away from buying it. But then when I played the game at home, I was like, now I get it, because each player has their own pyramid, and the neoprene mats that they were selling, there was basically just like a card game neoprene mat for TCG. Basically, I should buy one for Lorcana, I guess. But, you know, for everyone for their pyramid, but it was just a nice art, Egyptian art. So anyway, that was Pyramido. One of my highlights for Gen Con. Also, they gave me the spoiler that they are releasing a new edition of Bruxelles, which it will include the expansions, because this game used to belong to another publisher that now has disappeared. I think it was Tasty Mantle Games. And it's going to have all the expansions, and it's going to be released at Essen. So I'm giving you the spoiler there. And you know, the game, I got to see the game, you know, the production, it looks beautiful. So if you're going to be in Essen, better check that out, because, you know, it's another game that is going to be released. They actually gave me another game to try, which it will be released until March of next year. So I'm going to hold on that, in that way I can tell you more about it in the near future. Also, they're coming up with another game that is going to be released next year. Which is Yokohama, of course, but it's going to be deluxed, and it's going to be to be re-released. It's going to have some modifications to the game as well. It's going to have a clear rule book. You know, it's going to be table space optimization, and it's going to be more dynamic and also ergonomic, gamingly speaking. So stay tuned for those upcoming releases from Synapse Games. Once again, on the Essen that I just told you, that Bruxelles, and then next Gen Con, stay tuned for surprise, and then in March another release that I will tell you in the future. So those were my highlights from Synapse Games. Then I went and talked to my friends from Gambling Games, which I already told you that, you know, they had this epic booth over there, and they got to show me the Last Kingdom. Last Kingdom, which is the game that I was telling you that is based on the TV show from Netflix, is designed by John D. Clare. It's a 2-5 player game. Once again, it's kind of like Blood Rage and Area Control. So it plays nicely, I guess it seems like when I demo it. It has the war and conflicts. You know, it's a card action. You have card actions. You have draft as well. Area Control. You know, it took also a year for John D. Clare to produce it and develop it. And it looked very nice, actually. It was very nice to see it on the board. The components, the miniatures look great. The factions where you get influence, I guess, if I remember correctly, those were look great as well. So that's a game that's interesting. I got a review copy. I'm looking forward to play it and tell you more about it in the future. And Tiny Epic Vikings, that's one of the recent games from Tiny Epic that it was fulfilled. Production looks fantastic. You can go to my Instagram, SoloBG Podcast. Basically, an area control Viking game as well. I'm looking forward to play it for that one. We got the neoprene mat, of course, because we need the neoprene mat for Tiny Epic Vikings. And I'm looking forward. I will tell you one spoiler, though, of the next Tiny Epic. I hope I don't get in trouble with Gambling Games here. But I hear a rumor that the next version of Tiny Epic is going to be Tiny Epic Crimes. So what are they going to do? I have no idea, but I love crime games. So Tiny Epic Crimes is the rumor of the next game that will be developing by Tiny Epic, by Gambling Games and on their Tiny Epic series. So yeah. That was another highlight, I guess, and a spoiler that I have for you. Then after that, I went and visited my friend Nathan from Lost Ruins of Arnax. Well, not from there, from CGE. and he was showing me, you know, the new expansion of Lost Ruin of Arnak, which it looks very, 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 I will say it again, interesting and nice and epic and immersive and everything else that you want to add. And I have it here with me. It was sold out on Gen Con, but I was lucky enough to get a copy, and I'm looking forward to play it, because actually, if you remember when I did my trilogy of Dune Imperium, Endless Winter, and Lost Ruins of Arnak, Lost Ruins of Arnak, my friends, is there. And the expansion already that it has is fantastic. But the Missing Expedition, though, that one is literally made for solo gamers. And it has an expansion, and it has two new leaders, new assistant, guardian, archaeological sites, idols, and more. Two new temples to explore, 21 handy items, 13 mysterious artifacts. It has a campaign of 6 chapters with 6 challenges. We will be unlocking content gradually. Fully replayable, since the decisions that you make during the campaign, they're going to impact on how the campaign will develop, and then you can play it again, choosing different options, right? It has more encounter cards, which there can be used also with multiplayer games, and of course more components. So the game looks great. It's basically the way I saw it, and the way it was portrayed to me is basically another game inside Lost Ruins of Arnak. So I feel like after this, that's probably all it needs. I hope they don't make it any more complex in a way, because it's very good as it is, and this expansion is just gonna like finish it, like put adding shine to the gold and to the box of Lost Ruins of Arnak. I hope though they come with a big box, because now I need more space to storage everything. But the Missing Expedition was also another highlight for me on Gen Con. And yeah, it was just you know, very, very, very nice. And yeah, I'm looking forward to show you on the game. Then after that, I went with my good friends on Pondosaurus Games. And they were able to, you know, show me After Us, which to me is also known as Planet of the Apes. That's it. It's a game that it's with the art of Vincent Dutrade, and basically it's beautiful looking, nice production, non-thematic game. Basically all you're doing is you're drawing cards from your deck, and you're going to assemble those in a row. You're going to draw 4, and you're going to assemble those in a row as however you want. But the interesting thing is that each card will have a frame that if you are able to close the frame with another card that is next to it, you will get the reward or the resource, right? Basically, it's a race for 80 victory points. There's also a way of, you know, placing a token after you do the cards, to place a token that will give you some bonuses. But there's also some more chimpanzees or apes cards on the center of the board. You buy one of those, you place on top of your card, and the rewards in the frames are better, they connect to each other better, and they give you more victory points. There's a rage track as well, because every ape can get rage, and when you can get rage, you destroy cards, and when you destroy cards, you get the rewards, either victory points or resources, and that's how you're going to be playing. The interaction between gamers, and this is something very interesting about the game, and actually Reina was telling me, like, Derek, there's zero interaction on this game. It's basically made, everybody's doing a solo multiplayer. Yes and no, in my perspective, and this is very subjective. I play the game solo, and I play the game 2 players, and I feel like this is definitely a game that probably I wouldn't like to play more than 4 players, just because the risk of the AP delaying the game, because the turns are being simultaneously. But I think even if there's no interaction, definitely the race aspect by itself to get to 80 points add that competitive interaction between players. right? So I mean, that's just basic, right? I know you could say like, come on, that's like the ground for every competitive game. Yes, but at the end of the day, that competitiveness, and that race for 80 points, believe it or not, I mean, it does an involuntarily or voluntarily interaction among players. Mechanically speaking, the only interaction mechanic is that token, where when you do it as a bonus, you can pay two resources of the same to copy any of your neighbor's resources or token. In that way, you can get the bonus as well. But that's the only interaction. You're not stealing cards from anywhere, from anyone or blocking anyone. But I mean, for some reason, yes, I mean, I agree with the solo multiplayer, but I think people are judging the game a lot based on that. When to me, it feels kind of like still like, yes, you're playing, you're doing your thing. Now, don't get me wrong. Mechanically, you're doing your thing. You're not doing anything that influences the other player turn. But at the same time, you're still competing on the same game. So it's a game that I enjoy, actually, you know. I can enjoy playing with people, and I can enjoy playing solo. The solo mode is a little bit different. You have the King of Apes, where he's going to do a few things during each phase of the game. So he's going to be getting resources. He's going to be trying to buy expensive cards to get more victory points. Every time that you do your frames, you take resources away from him. Basically, that's the whole mechanic that you can kind of like prevent him from getting points. It's stupidly hard. It's very hard, but still very enjoyable. So I think, you know, overall, I really enjoy the game. Overall, I think it's a game that I will highly recommend. The art from Vincent Retreat is fantastic. I don't care if the game doesn't have a theme. For me, it's Planet of the Apes. And highly recommended for solo and multiplayer from my end. So that was another game. They also talked to me about another game on Rest that is coming up. It's a two-player game. It took 1 year of development again. And basically, it's a game that we play Rebellion versus Empire. Sounds familiar? Well, it's without the license of Star Wars, of course. And we're trying to fulfill missions on different districts. And we're going to do... if you're Empire, we're able to dominate three districts. Or if you're the Rebels, where you're trying to get 9 influence on the game. A very fun, very easy, fast-paced two-player game that is coming out on Rest. The art looks beautifully. Those are the type of two-player games that I like, so I'm looking forward to that as well from our friends from Pondosaurus Games. They released Beacon Patrol, which is apparently based on a computer game. I haven't had a chance to try it. I also got a copy of District Noir, which I'm looking forward to play. So those were the highlights from Pondosaurus Games. From AEG Games, my friend Vladimir Orellana, he invited us very kindly again for the 3rd year in a row to the Content Creator Party. It was a blast, and they show us their upcoming games for, you know, the near future. And then among them, it's Waffle Time, which in Waffle Time, we're trying to build our waffles, you know. It's kind of like a set collection game where you're going to be going around your waffle board trying to put some ingredients on the waffle, making itself delicious, but also scoring points for the set collection. So Waffle Time is there. It's a game that's going to be released soon. Look, production is very nice. It's small box from AEG once again. It's a game that is coming up very soon. The designer is Maxime Demeyer. I hope I pronounced it correctly. And yeah, it's pour on syrup, gather your toppings, craft the perfect bite. It's a 1-4 player game, 30 minutes, 10 euro plus. Looking forward to try it. It looks very cute. It looks very fun for families. So yeah, that's Waffle Time from AEG. Another games that they were announcing that backers just got them is Deep Dive and Point City. Now, I want to focus on Point City here because I had the opportunity to play the solo mode and also the multiplayer mode. I remember playing one time Point Salad. I wasn't a huge fan of it. But Point City, once again, I'm so sorry for the dogs. Point City, it's great. It's a nice, you know, engine building fast-paced game where basically it's going to be a tableau of resources. You're going to grab adjacent resources to your hand, and then as you replenish that tableau, you're going to turn those from the deck of resources. You're going to turn them face up now, and there will be cities buildings from cities. And then those buildings will give you more resources you're able to obtain and pay for them, permanent resources. They give you bonus tokens. They're also going to give you points. And you're going to be building your engine. And the game is going to end when the when we're not able to refill the tableau. That's basically, there's going to be some token with bonuses, but at the end, whoever has more points wins. If you play solo, it's kind of like you have an AI, which is cool because it's not a beat your own score, and I always appreciate that. But it has a very nice mechanic of solo mode where two tokens are going to be following the tableau, one on the upper part, one on the lateral part, and they're going to be basically making the decision which cards the AI is going to take, and depending on the difficulty that you select, those cards are going to give them points or not if there are resources, but they're also going to get buildings, and they're just going to build them right away, which is easier for them. And yeah, it has a very fun solo mode, very fun engine builders. I love engine building, especially when they're fast and fun. A small box game, Point City, highly, highly recommended. I hear very good things also about Deep Dive, and I'm looking forward to try it. Another game that is from AEG that they show us that is coming up very soon on retail as well is Number Drop. Number Drop, basically, it's a roll and write. It's a math game where you're rolling some dice and you're getting some Tetris shapes. And then you just start to assemble those Tetris shapes on your sheet. And you're going to be scoring points. That's basically it. Very thinky, very mathy. And I'm looking forward to try it as well. There's a Smash Up expansion as well coming up. It's called Excellent Movies Dudes. I'm not a huge fan of Smash Up, but if you are, check this out, because basically you're getting a lot of the pop culture references without the license. You get the Ghostbusters, you get some aliens there, you get some Robocop, maybe Jean-Claude Van Damme inside, why not too? Grab your popcorn. Smash Up is back with a rat to the theme expansion featuring the best in 80s cinema. So that's another one that, once again, if you are in the in the 80s like me, and if you like Smash Up, well, you should give it a try as well. So that's another one. Then we talk with our friends from Funfair Games, Good Games Publishing, and they provided some copies of games that I'm looking forward to try that I've heard nothing from good things. They were showing us Funfair, which is a game for 2 to 4 players that takes about 15 minutes per player to play. The game seems pretty fun. The production is very nice. The game is designed by Joel Finch, and the art is by Mr. Cuttington. And basically, during the game, you will build and recruit. You will upgrade, design, and you have your theme park on their way. And that's how you're going to be playing the game. I'm looking forward to try it and to tell you all about it. There's another game that I'm still looking forward to play. It has a solo mode, and it's going to be released, I think, in October, or I think it has an embargo in October, so I won't tell you too much right now. But basically, it's Mercurial, created by David Go. It's a wonderful player. It's 45 to 90 minutes, 14 euro plus. And you roll your element dice, you shape the elements with alterations, you craft and combine your spells, and you cast, perform heroic deeds. It has a card game with dice and kind of like building the tableau as well. So it has a solo mode, and I'm looking forward to try it. Once again, I cannot tell you more about it just because I believe it has an embargo until next month. But as soon as I play it and as soon as I bring it to the table, of course, you will hear me talking about it. Too Many Cooks as well from Good Publishing Games, which is a cooperative game, another highlight, where we're chefs trying to cook the desired dish. It's a cooperative game, very simple. It has a lot of cards with ingredients. Definitely a game that I can see a lot of families having fun. I will try it. I will let you know. And that was in regards to our friends on Good Game Publishing. We had a great time. They were fantastic. Their games looked beautiful. And the booth was great as well. Then with Adam Apple's Games, last year when I went and buy one of my favorite games from Tile Polyomino, which is Planet Unknown, I was talking to my friends over there. And I'm very terrible with names, and I'm so sorry. But one of the guys from Adam Apple's game, he happens to listen to the podcast, and when I go to the booth, I was like, hey, man, I remember like last year you were showing me the prototype of this game, and I was very interesting, and he would very kindly give me a copy. I don't remember his name, but I want to say hi, however you are, that works or it's part of the team from Adam Apple's game and is probably listening to the episode. Thank you so much, and please reach out to me. In that way, I can tell your name on the next episode. But basically, we're going to be playing in the near future Four Humors, a game of wits and guts, and it's designed by Charlie McCarron. It's from Anna Apple Games, and it's basically, in a way, a deduction game, but that you can play solo. A strategy deduction and prisoner dilemma social experiment for 1 to 6 fledging doctors. What you can do in the game? Well, you can visit citizens and secretly sway their personality with personality potions. You could resolve personality conflicts following the principles of personality, and you are winning potions are moving onto the board, and we hope to complete objectives to win. 1-6 players, once again, 10-year-old plus, solo mode, and 45 minutes. So I'm looking forward, to try this game and tell you more about it for humors, because you know I love the deduction games, and there's only a few that have this solo mode. And I'm not talking about deductions like Search for Planet X or things like that. I'm talking about, kind of like a social deduction aspect of it, but in a board game, hey, sounds right up for me. So I'm looking forward to try it. Then we went also, as the days go by, we went and say hi to my friend Austin from Ivy Studios. Now, in the past, I have told you about Mythic Mischief Volume 1. They released Volume 2. I'm looking forward to try it and tell you more. But Mythic Mischief is a great game where we're basically around kind of like a monsters / Harry Potter factions style. And we are running away from the librarian, trying to, find the books and so on and so forth. One versus one. It also has a good solo mode. I was looking forward, again, that they released 3 years ago, which it was Moonrakers. Moonrakers, which is a deck-building game with a fantastic production that it plays, I believe it's 1-4 players. I could be wrong. It's 1-5 players. Big box, nice art. And they were so kind and giving me a review copy of the game with the Binding Ties expansions, with Overload expansion and Nomad expansion. This is a game that looks fantastic on the table. The boot from Ivy Studios game on Gen Con was great. People were playing. People were having fun. And just the production of the games is like one of those publishers that I love, because they put a lot of love on their productions. And I'm looking forward to try this one and tell you more about it. But Moonraker is basically a deck-building game where we're trying to fulfill contracts. It has metal coins on it, which, of course, we always love metal coins. Fulfill contracts, and then whoever has more points at the end of the game is the winner. If you play solo, you're playing on a bid your own score, which I know, I just say that, I'm not a huge fan of it, but everyone says that it works pretty well. But basically, you have a time tracker, you use one of the tokens from the other factions, and you're playing on 10 rounds, and you have an AI as well that is kind of like interfering with the game. You're trying to make more contracts, trying to hire, more crew to your tableau, or to your deck, and then at the end of the game, you will score a certain amount of points, and then you will compare that to a chart provided on the game, and that will tell you, kind of like where you at as far as your score. Now, that's with the base game. I don't know if any of the expansions adds more in-depth solo mode, but I will tell you more for sure in the near future. Our friends from Red Raven Games, my God, they are having a blast with the City of Gods, Sleeping Gods game, sorry, City of, that's the Teotihuacan City of Gods, a Sleeping Gods game, dungeon, well, it's not a dungeon crawler, it's a campaign game where you're going to be, traveling with your boat among different places in shores, and you're going to go to different towns, kind of like a New Orleans, a Louisiana type of thing vibe. You're going to have fantastic characters from the same illustrations that usually Mr. Lockhart used for his games, Ryan Lockhart. And the important thing is that Distant Sky is coming up. Distant Sky is an expansion for this game. It's going to be a thing arriving to backers in October, hitting retail probably in November. And that just adds more to the story, but also it lets you to play a separate campaign. It's supposed to have some scenarios as well where you don't have to play the whole campaign. As in the Sleeping Gods. Production is very nice, and I'm looking forward to try it as well. They also provided me a copy of Nightfall, which is another solitary kind of like campaign game. I'm looking forward to try it. Most of the things from Red Raven Games, which they are made by Ryan Lockhart, it's automatically a go for me, right? Like, you have Near and Far and Above and Below. You have those games with a very nice kind of like a Super Nintendo and kind of like a The Legend of Zelda, Wind Waker kind of art. Actually, if you go to the Gen Con from last year, I had the opportunity to interview Ryan Lockhart, and he was telling me about the art and how he grew up with the kids, playing Super Nintendo and all those consoles, and that's where the art, it was very inspiring for him, and he knew, how to, basically what he wanted when he designed games. Mega Lion is another game that shares the same art, and But it's in a very more simple game where you like kind of like you're playing a video game or on a card tableau as you're building as you go. But anyway, Distant Skies is coming out from Sleeping God. I had an opportunity to see it, to try it a little bit. It looks fantastic. It plays fantastic, very smoothly. And I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to get that expansion, play it. And then, of course, as always, share more with you about my experience. Then, after that, we also visit a very nice booth that I already spoiled you, which is a Flying Frog Productions booth. This is what I like from Gen Con and part of me. Like, you know, the vibe, the hype that you get around Gen Con. Their booth, it's huge. And then you have a bunch of tables, you know, with the games displayed. And all the minis are painted. They're assembled, painted. They look great. Even with some, custom, you know, terrain there as you're playing. And people were playing like 5 or 6 different dungeon crawlers at the same time. And people were excited. People were happy. Shadows of Brimstone is this universe of dungeon crawlers where you can buy a version of Shadows of Brimstone, and then you buy another one in the future. And as you play the campaign, as you play the different scenarios, there's going to be portals that they're going to be transporting you from one game to another. Being said, for example, like let's say you're playing in the, you know, I don't know, I'm just going to make something up. You're playing on the Old West, right? You're playing with the Old West Shadows of Brimstone, and you're playing an adventure, and then eventually you make the decision to go into a portal during your campaign, and now you can be in the Valley of the Serpent Kings with the same characters, which is crazy. Now, Valley of the Serpent Kings is the new upcoming edition from Shadows of Brimstone, once again published by Flying Frog Productions. Valley of the Serpent Kings, the premise is that, you know, we are Spaniards, that we, you know, we came to, you know, to this pre-Hispanic times here in America. And as we go and discover, you know, new cultures and a new world, kind of like Columbus, well, guess what? You get into also all the folklore and mythology of the Valley of the Serpent Kings. And you have these beings that they're chasing you, and you're exploring, you're discovering treasures, and so on and so forth. And the story starts to get immersive. And you start to get, like, in that world where you just literally trying to survive by yourself because you got into that dungeon that probably you shouldn't, and you shouldn't conquer America to begin with, but you did it, and now you're getting in there and having this immersive, epic adventure. It's a 1 to 4 players game, and it's an adventure board game, just like every Flying Frog production, you know. They also had their new game, A Touch of Evil, the new edition, I'm sorry. They were out of the Indiana Jones team. I actually asked for that one, but they were out. They're coming with a reprint, though, so stay tuned for that. But Shadows of Brimstone, there's so many great versions. I remember talking with my friend Adam Smith on a previous episode from Rolling Solo. And if you happen to listen to that episode, basically he put us almost as a number one Shadows of Brimstone, just because for Solo, it's just fantastic. It's a universe that it can expand, and it can go to many, many, many different branches. And you can buy more games from Shadows of Brimstone and mix and match, and your campaign can go forever. Or you can decide to stop it, I guess, if you go to a place where you either are killed or you succeed in your campaign. Although I don't know if in the Valley of the Serpent Kings is going to be easy or not, but anyway, I'm looking forward to get that immersive experience. And as you know me, you know, play my soundtrack in the background, paint the minis, talking about the minis. It was a downside for me, but they explained me, and I'm more intrigued and exciting about it. So Shadows of Brimstone, though, the miniatures, they come unassembled. Now, as I was talking to my friends from Flying Frog Games, you know, they were sharing with me, like, some people, they were like, well, you don't sell your games, we build the minis and so on and so forth. They were telling me that, indeed, there's a huge, huge niche, or I won't say niche, an area within our hobby that likes to assemble the minis and, you know, of course, paint them, that we know. And I was, like, surprised, you know, a little bit surprised from an, you know, ignorant way to the theme. Then I started to ask people that they were playing the game and they were buying copies, and they actually told me that they had a lot of fun assembling the minis because basically similar rituals as I do for playing the game with Saunders, well, they do it the same way, but building minis. And sometimes they're watching a nice movie and they're building the minis as well. So they say it's not too hard. They say that it's exciting. They say that it's fun. And I'm looking forward to give it a try to that part of the experience myself, and I will tell you more at the same time. Now, there's a difference, though, that Flying Frog Productions, they put a lot of love and care on the trays with the minis to make it easier and enjoyable for you to assemble them. Versus, for example, Aliens and Other Glorious Days in the Carps, I had a terrible time trying to put those aliens together, especially the tails. I hate it. But I'm looking forward to tell you my experience with Valley of the Serpent Kings by Shadows and Brimstones and published by Flying Frog Productions. Their booth was great, like I said. It was just the classic epicness of a dungeon crawler around Gen Con, so I was very happy to stop by and also obtain a copy of Valley of the Serpent Kings. Then, as we were walking, we got to back to the chaotic area close to Ravensburger, but then we stopped in a very nice area and we started to see some fantastic games. We were talking with our friends from Pegasus Spiel from the North America division, and you know, they were talking about us, about some games that they had, and we got a chance to play The Beast. The Beast, which is also by Studio Midhall as well. The Beast, which is a hidden movement, quote-unquote hidden movement, game where one player is going to be the beast, or one of the beasts. You can choose any beast that you want, any monster that you want, and the other players will be the hunters. And guess what? We were trying to kill the beast, and the beast is trying not to kill us. You are wrong. Most likely, on the contracts or the scenario that you choose, the beast, he doesn't care about you. He just want to make sure that you don't get in his way. And he's going to send his minions, let's put it that way, to try to stop you. What the beast wants to do, the beast wants to kill the people and the villagers from that area, from that woods. Because basically the premise of the game is that, you know, basically we were, you know, people, and we were nomads, that we get to this line to the promised land to get our future and start to build our villages. But guess what? The beast was there before us. So the beast is going to kill us. I'm sorry, my friends, to tell you that. So unless we, the hunters, we kill the beast first. That's how we basically win the game. Now, the difference on this game, though, which is unique, is that the game, yes, it's a hidden movement, but the beast most likely will be revealed very, very, very often. That makes me think, like, for example, Fury of Dracula, which is a classic game that I actually and really enjoy. Fury of Dracula, you're Dracula, and you're trying to be away and not being found and make sure that they don't reveal you, right? And you're playing these cards as they track where you were, as far as the map and the oceans and so on and so forth. And you get clues if you're in the oceans or not. And that's how players can know where Dracula kind of is around the map. With the beast, you have some movement cards. But the beast has to kill, most of the time, villagers. And every time that the beast kills, he reveals himself. And it only has, like, usually three nights or three, basically three rounds. And every round divides on dawn, day, and night. He has to reveal, he has to kill. So people get to know very often where the beast is. The tricky part is to kill the beast. So that was very different, and also has a very nice mechanic that I haven't seen in hidden deduction games, which was probably one of my favorite parts of the game, which is the drafting part. So basically at the beginning of each day, we're going to have an action deck. And among the players, let's say it's a three-player game, two players are hunters, one player is the beast. We're going to draw cards. Let's say we draw, you know, four cards, five cards. Action cards, and the action card will be divided by a symbol that will mark the restrictions where you can play those cards, and also a top action and a bottom action. Top action usually will be relating to the hunters. Bottom action is related for the beast. So you're choosing a card, passing to the player on your left, and then eventually we'll get to the beast as well. So you can be giving powerful cards to the beast because you want to keep powerful actions, or you can plan the other way around, which is like, okay, I don't want to give this action to the beast, so I'm going to keep it, even if the action for us kind of suck. So I haven't seen that in a hidden movement game, and I actually love it. The production of the game is fantastic. You know, one versus many, even the one that is playing the beast, the game comes with a mini map, which is not very useful, to be honest, because it would be better to track your movement there. Anyway, that's another subject. We ended up placing some tokens, which, I mean, come on, that was assuming that the company would do the production of making sure that you can mark the map as you go. Anyway, it's fixable because, once again, you can use tokens. But the most important thing is that the mini map comes with a screen, which it kind of resembles me of the role-playing Dungeons & Dragons games where the master or the dungeon master has this screen, right? And he's like behind. And pretty cool. You can check the pictures on our Instagram, SoloBG Podcast. The production of the game is fantastic. The theme of the game is fantastic. The playthrough of the game, it was very unique. And actually, my experience with the game, I played only once. It was, we started to learn the game. It seems pretty easy. Quality of the cards, that's one thing that I'm not sure if I liked it. The cards were very thin, so definitely put a sleeve there. But they were, this, one of my friends said, like, it's very thin but high quality. And the art was great. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, just to keep that in mind. But the art of the game is fantastic. The production of the game is great. Do I like the game? Well, we played the game, and it just, the end was kind of like anticlimactic. But maybe because we as the hunter, my friend and I, we probably didn't plan well because we were learning the game. And actually in the rulebook, it tells you the beast is designed, it's a game that is designed to be played over and over in the way you can actually enjoy the game and see it shine. The problem is, if you as me, you're like me, that you buy games constantly, or your gaming group keeps getting game constantly, well, you have more games to play, and you're not going to be playing the same thing over and over. Now, that being said, when we finished the game, I was like, well, I don't know if I want to keep this game. But then something weird happened, which it doesn't happen very often with me, with some games, that I'm in the same situation. I could not stop thinking about the game. And even I was texting with my friends that I played with, I was like, you know, I think, like, maybe the game, maybe I don't want to get rid of it, things like that. Then I met with one of my friends later tonight, I'm sorry, later that on a night to have dinner, we were talking about the game, and we were like, well, I don't know, man, it has something, So, anyway, with that being said, like, it's a hidden movement game, but you always revealed, or you try to want to be revealed because you want to kill people. So, I think I'm going to give it another try, but I'm just giving you the premise of the game, how it is, and it's different, though. It's very, very, very different, and it's not your classic hidden movement game. I own Fury of Dracula, I own Sniper Elite, which is great. This one, I'm going to try it again, but and I will tell you once I do it, but so far, I mean, like I said, it has a lot of good things. Production, theme-wise, the mechanics, the drafting, it's just... That part is just great. Just that, the ending. It's a little bit anticlimactic, but I think that was more on us. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So I will tell you more about it. Another game, the first ride, you know, first ride to get to the moon. I mean, that tells you all that it's definitely a game that you want to try. I was released last year. That's it. Basically, we are rats trying to get in a race to the moon. We're, you know, going through different areas and locations as we go, like kind of like a light bulbs, and we're getting abilities and so on and so forth. Very fun game. Very nice production from Pegasus Spiel, and I'm looking forward to try it. Take some pictures for you as well. I'm sorry, play it solo. It has a solo mode. Have some pictures for you, and then in that way, I can tell you my thoughts as well. As we're reaching out the end of the episode, then I also stopped by Upper Deck, which I already mentioned with their kind of booth. Fantastic booth. It was like they were focused on The Boys, the TV show. These superheroes from Vogue Laboratories, and they had the game where it's basically the one versus one. I think it's called Versus System, the one versus one. And yeah, so it was on the one versus one system with The Boys, and that had the whole booth. Now, on the other hand, they had for us the Matrix Encounters, which once again, that on the Legendary system. I'm looking forward to try that one actually, because I ended up getting a copy. I set it up. I couldn't play it because of the twins, and things started to go crazy. But it's the first Legendary Encounter that has standees. And thematically, it seems like it works great as far as that you are in the Matrix. You can choose the characters from the trilogy, from the movie. You can be Neo. You can be... Well, someone has to be always Neo, I think. But you can be also Switch. You can be Trinity. You can be Morpheus. And in order for you to buy cards, if you're familiar with the Legendary system, you have to be out of the Matrix. If you are in the Matrix, you cannot buy cards. And it's cool because thematically wise, Neo, he doesn't know at the beginning, and he's always in the Matrix, I'm sorry. And he has to come back to the Matrix at the end of every round. So it looks very fantastically thematic. People say it, or have said, that it grabs many of the things from the previous editions of Legendaries, and just make it all condensed in this one. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to play it. So far, I own Legendary Encounters. I'm sorry. I own the Predator. I own the X-Files. I own the Aliens. I own the 007 Legendary James Bond. Now the Matrix, and of course Marvel. So it would be interesting to do an episode about the Legendaries and see which one I think is better for solo mode. So far, I can tell you that Alien is probably the best one, but we'll see. I can probably analyze those and play them on a marathonic way and see who is the champion. Why not? We'll do it in the future. Which other game? Then we stop also with our good friends by Daywalker Syndicate, and they show us a game that I was caught up just by the eye. By the looking of the game, by my eye, the art, oh my god, it's one of the most beautiful arts that I have seen in recent times in board games. And the art is made by Jeremy Gulota, I hope I pronounced correctly, and also he's the designer of Wild Realms. Wild Realms is sort of like a set collection game. We all have our different kingdoms or realms. The production of the game is fantastic. The boards, the quality of the cards, they're like tarot size, but the quality and the art is just superb. This game, it's just beautiful as production and art. I will tell you that. It's a set collection where I just tried the solo mode, so I cannot go into a full review because I want to play in multiplayer as well and play it solo mode again. But basically, you're trying to bring animals to your different kingdoms. And every kingdom will have to bring in like a certain type of animal, like to get the set, but also make sure you have a leader in that way. You can lock down that kingdom in a way. There's a space on the board for alliances. Those alliances will help you to fight other people. Try to take cards away from them. And also there's a mechanic where you can fight kingdom versus kingdom to kind of like prevent the other players to finalize their kingdom. You can unlock your kingdom to do that as well. There's many, many, many mechanics involved. When you're playing solo, the game changes a little bit. You have a area where it's called the wild, where you have basically animals coming to each of your kingdoms. And then you have also a deck that is called Into the Wild, which it triggers certain crazy things around the game. There's also some deck of cards in the middle of the table for everyone, which is like Legendary Beast, I think that's what it's called. And you get those beasts or those animals, and you get to do their abilities on their turn or whatever the card tells you. But the art of this game is just, it's, I don't know how to describe the art. It's just like, it's beautiful animals, beautiful painted, a lot of very vibrant colors, and kind of like on a surreal, I guess, type of art. I cannot talk about art because I'm not an expert by any means. So I hope I'm categorizing the art kind of like at least close to correct, which is kind of like surreal, I guess, in a way. Very kind of like a psychedelic art. But it's pretty cool and it's beautiful. You can check once again the pictures of this in my Instagram, SoloBG Podcast, Facebook, Twitter. But the game, it really surprised me. Like I said, it's a crowdfunding game that it was give to backers not too long ago, or I think it's still in the process. But when I walked by there, what caught me was just the art on the game. And I love to discover games like this in Gen Con, you know, because usually, or in conventions, you go and you know, like, okay, this publisher is going to release this publisher is going to release that from bigger publishers, right? But this one, it was kind of, to me, one of those hidden gems. And I'm very excited to keep playing it. I'm very excited to do and talk with you with a full review of, you know, playing in multiplayer, of course, but also playing it solo and tell you more about it, because I think it's a game that deserves love. 1 to 4 players. It plays in 50 to 70 minutes at age 12 year plus. That was the Wild or Wild Realms. Once again, a beautiful game by Daywalker Syndicate. And then we went to the great booth of Japanime Games. Games that are based, of course, in Japan, Japan art. Anime, manga, you name it. You're probably a better fan than me for that atmosphere. I only like growing up watching Dragon Ball Z, Saint Seiya or Knights of the Zodiac, the original one. I love Death Note as well. Attack on Titans. You know, I can only name a few because I'm not a huge fan of anime. But anyway, Japanime Games. I tried their Kamigami Battles, Rise of the Old Ones. I demoed there and I walk away with a copy. Nice deck building game. We are basically elder gods. And we are recruiting people to our for our decks. And we are trying to, you know, defeat the opponents and win the battle. So it's in a series of Kamigami Battles. They have, you know, different kind of like franchises and universe. This is Rise of the Old Ones. I really like it. The art, it's very lovely. It's very cosplay, manga. I'm sorry if I'm very ignorant to the thing, but very anime. I asked to be more and more informative about it. I asked, like, is this based on any, like, anime show or movie or whatever? They told me, no. It's just we do the art this way. Japanime Games, of course. And this is just a system that we came through. Once again, Kamigami Battles. It's a game that is 2-6 players, game time 60 minutes, age 14 year old plus. Beautiful art, beautiful cards, very nice mechanics. You know, the deck building has some nice twists. So yeah, I'm looking forward once again to playing more, and that way I can tell you all about it as well. And those were, like, you know, pretty much my highlights of my tour of Gen Con. Then towards the end, on the last day, on Sunday, I walked through a booth from our friends from First Fish Games, and they have this very beautiful looking game, type of like art, kind of like art and production Wingspan-ish. And I was like, I need to take this one home and try it. And I'm talking about Dogs in Tow, designed by Stephanie Kwok. And illustrated by Andrew Bosley. It's a 1-4 players, 10 euro plus, 30-60 minutes. And, you know, we are in a dog sanctuary, and we have to make company to the dogs, you know, when we're visiting different locations in the park. And, you know, it's a puzzle game. We have to get our dogs in a row. We have to walk them around the park. We have to feed them. And then attract them to different locations to get, you know, victory points. Very easy game, it looks like. Very fun, like family game. Very cute art, very cute components. I'm looking forward to try it as well. That was towards the end of the conventions. Another games that I purchased and I played during the convention, or during the nights on the conventions, that I really like. I play and I bought Brotherwise Games Castles by the Sea. It's a 1-4 player game, 30-45 minutes, 12 euro plus. Basically, we're building our castles on the sand, and we are putting those little people in our imagination as kids. When we were building this castle, we were placing them like a princess, like a wizard, guardians, and we're building towers and so on and so forth. But there, of course, there are always perils, and there are always enemies that are trying to destroy our castles. We have a giant, which is represented with a baby. We have a beast, which is represented by a dog. We have a dragon, which is represented by a kite. So it's a very cute production, very nice, produced by Brotherwise Games. I demo it, you know, and I really like it. Very puzzly game, very thinky game. Has a solo mode that I haven't tried. And yeah, it's a game that I want to try more and tell you more about it. Another game that I purchased, Wild Tile West, by Dire Wolf Games, which is from the same designer of Clank and Dune Imperium. So you cannot go wrong. Wild Tile West, basically you roll, you allocate those results on different areas, and then you grab polyominoes to put them on your town. But there's different goals. You have a sheriff, you have bandits, you start to shoot, kind of like in the West. Very nice. I love it. I had a great time. I'm looking forward to play it more. I played 4 players, and it lasted like an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and 30 minutes. It was great. I'm looking forward to it and tell you more, because I want to try it solo once again. Just from the same designer from Dawn Imperium, so that should tell you something. Where Dawn Imperium was also on my favorite games ever. I also bought another game that I saw my friend Adam Smith Rolling Solo playing it, Masters of the Night. We are vampires. We're trying to feed from the city. Very black and white art on the game. I'm excited. It has a solo mode. It's a cooperative game. We'll see how it goes. I also pick up my copy of Lunar Rush from Dead Man Alive Games. It's a worker placement game, not a worker placement game, I don't know because I haven't played it, but it's a Euro game. I remember seeing the production last Gen Con. I did the Kickstarter, or the crowdfunding campaign. I went and picked it up during Gen Con. I'm excited to try it as well. Ra, the Deluxe Edition by Rainer Nitzia. I'm going to play it again and tell you more about it. Another game, just as highlight as we're closing out the episode, I play Scream the Game, actually, by Funko Games. Pretty fun. You download an app, and we are playing through the first Scream movie, and you're going to put on your app the number of the players. Actually, you can take a selfie, and that way, when Ghostface call you, it's going to show your name. It's going to show Derek and Derek's face. And he can ask you for things such as like popcorn, a phone, DVDs, or whatever. And if you better have that on your hand the next time he calls you, otherwise we will die. And that's how it is. We're playing through scenes of the game. We're drawing cards, complying with his requests. He's calling multiple times. The cool thing is that they use the original voice actor from Scream. So it's a $20 game that I recommend. I had fun. And yeah, another game, actually, I was before I close up, that I was surprised to see at Gen Con, which I don't know if this is going to make you upset or not, but I ended up buying Contra, and previously I got Mega Man. Contra, it's a game that it was originally made, and actually, let me go, it actually has the logo, from Blacklist Games. And I know Blacklist Game, my friends, you know that it's been kind of like in a very unfortunate situation with a lot of you, my dear backers and friends, but they had many copies, a lot of copies from Contra. They were selling them in 40 bucks, I think, Contra. Cooperative game for one of four players, designed by Adam and Brady Saller with Scott McFall. Kes Publisher is the one that he was there. He was in Blacklist. I'm looking forward to try it. I feel like once I try it and post pictures, like a bunch of people are going to keep complaining. Not because of me or me playing the game, it's just because of the whole situation. But they had a lot of copies there. I don't think they're even sold out. And it was very unfortunate because I know a lot of people around the world pre-ordered this game like 2 years ago, and not even a shipping notification. I hope you receive your games very soon, honestly. But it was very surprising for me to find this game that I was also, I didn't pre-order, but I was also looking, and it was in my radar. And when I saw it, just by, you know, I was walking like randomly around the convention, and I saw it, I was like, well, I need to get a copy. But it was very unfortunate they had it there for sale. But I don't know, maybe they're trying to get money. I don't know, but it's the whole situation. I'm not going to go in depth on it, but yeah, I got Contra. I will tell you once I play it my thoughts. Land vs. Sea is another game from Good Games Publishing that I also got. Another game that it was causing a lot of fuss around the convention and hype, Three Ring Circus from De Beer. I purchased a copy after the Gen Con because they were sold out on the first day. The game, the production looks fantastic. The production looks very nice. It has Indianapolis in the map. Basically, we are in the old circus times, and we're trying to travel with our circus around the U.S. And yeah, someone told me that they have different cards in case you don't agree or you have any, you know, situation or maybe you just don't want to play with, you know, animals that they used to use in the circuses on the past. So you can always replace those cards with other cards. I don't know if they're included or they were promos, but anyway, Three Ring Circus, a game that I'm looking forward to try again. Another highlights of the Gen Cons, of course, Barcelona was sold out. And there were many games that they were almost sold out or sold out. Wandering Towards by Capstone Games as well. I got a copy. I'm going to play it. Let's see how it goes. What else before, while I'm walking through my gaming library to see what else I was able to obtain. David Cherkov was very kind to provide a Petrichor 3D Deluxe copy of the box. You know, David Cherkov, which is, he is the CEO for Mighty Board Games. And you know, Petrichor is one of my wife's favorite games, actually. And it's a very nice, you know, peaceful, kind of like a worker placement, and you're moving your cloud. You're playing with some cards, it's raining, and you're getting resources and points. Petrichor, which is the nice smell, or the pleasant earth smell after the rain. So there you go. a little bit extra flavor. And I think that's all, my friends. I think those are the highlights from Gen Con. It was a unique Gen Con. Like I said, different Gen Con police involved. Lord Canna stealing $300,000 of Magic, 70,000 more attendees, sold out 4 days, sold out on Saturday. And another news, the city of Indianapolis just renewed the contract with Gen Con, and Gen Con is secure until 2030 to stay in Indianapolis, Indiana. Tribes of the Wind was also another game that I was able to get a little bit before Gen Con, but it was also on my list for Gen Con. I didn't get to play a lot. Oh, I also got, before I forget, I'm still looking to my library. I also got the Texas Chainsaw Massacre by Trick or Treat Studios. They didn't have the Funko game for sale. I actually got Animated, which is you're trying to make your Disney movie. We'll tell you more when I play it with my wife. But I played the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which I was very hyped because, of course, being a slasher, being the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the theme, everything was there. The solo mode, I'm keeping the game just because it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I will tell you that. It's very repetitive. Basically, it's a push your luck. You get into the, you know, Leatherface family kind of land, just like in the original movie. You use the original characters, original actors as well. And you're trying to find the gas and the keys for the van because the van doesn't have any gas and you lost the keys, I guess. So as you're walking through the lands of the Leatherface, because Leatherface land, you are trying to reveal tokens as you move. And you're trying to pull those tokens on a little barbecue tray, which is pretty cool. But if it's from the family of Leatherface, they will do nasty things. If it's Leatherface, he will go crazy with his chainsaw trying to catch you and kill you. If it's not, you can get more actions to a drawing bag where you're going to be pulling from there in kind of like a pusher lock. And that will determine how many actions you can do and what's going to happen during the round. But basically, every character will be doing the same, so it becomes very repetitive. As far as, okay, so the turn of, if you play solo with three players, let's say three characters, you're going to do, okay, this one moves. Two, reveal the tokens. Oh, something might happen. Then draw tokens from the back, and that's how many actions you get. Then the next one, draw tokens from the back, move. The tokens from the back, move. Draw tokens from the back, move. So in solo mode, it becomes very repetitive and also kind of boring in a way. The nice thing of the game, at least my experience, you do feel like Leatherface is dangerous and he's literally chasing you like crazy on the land and on his house and stuff. But that one was transported very well. But I mean, and then there were some rules that they were kind of like still like on the air as far as like, well, that means that, for example, when you move and when you run away and flee from Leatherface, you don't reveal any token that you go over through. But what about in the one that you end? Like, it doesn't specify that. Like, little things like that, right? And yeah, it was just very repetitive. It has another deck of mission cards that will kind of like make you explore the board a little bit more or do certain things a little bit more rather than just look for the gas and keys, which it will increase the difficulty of the game. Maybe multiplayer cooperative will be more fun because you're not doing the same thing over and over. Actually, you're letting someone else do it and kind of give you that rest and maybe have fun as we talk and as we run from Leatherface. But yeah, I was excited, but the hype went a little bit down after I played the game. But I'm still going to try it again with the deck of independent goals and definitely not solo with someone else in that way. I can tell you I don't want to get rid of it because it takes a chance of massacre, but if I have to, I guess I need the space at the same time. But yeah, that can tell you more if I like it or not by just my impressions. Halloween, it was high on my list by Emerson Matsuki. I got to try the prototype. They're going to start to ship the game on September 15, I think it is. It looks pretty cool. Another hidden movement game. Emerson Matsuki, designer of Spectre Ops as well. Very promising. Actually, basically one person is Michael Myers. The other person is the Laurie Strode and all her friends. And basically it's whoever killed the kids first. But it has a very nice mechanic of where if you have line of sight of Michael, you see him, of course, like in the movie, right? You see him in the corner. And you're like, holy shit. But sorry, this is a family podcast, but then if he's not adjacent to you, he will disappear, right? And then as soon as you don't see him anymore, you don't know where he is, and then he just spawns behind you and things like that. So that's a very nice scary vibe to it. Production looks nice with standees. You can buy the minis. I don't think I will buy the minis. The standees should be enough because the game is very well produced and it actually looks like very 80-ish. And I think that game should stay with that type of art and components-wise, 70s, 80s, just like the original movie was, you know, to bring you that part of nostalgia as well. So I'm looking forward. I'm very excited. The prototype played very well. It played very solid. I'm excited. But I just wanted to tell you that because on the last episode when I did my anticipated list, I went in depth to talk to even like John Carpenter's kind of like filmography. So yeah, I'm excited. I played the game. They didn't have it there for sale, unfortunately, but I'm going to pre-order it. So it will be here and I will tell you more about it. I hope someone do a fan solo mode and see how it works. Anyway, that was episode from Gengon. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you at least knew a little bit more about the games that I mentioned and maybe help you to make a wise decision as far as, you know, if you should get any of the games that I mentioned. I hope I gave you an entertaining Lorcana self-experience from Derek, I hope. At least, no, to know more about and maybe rumors that you didn't hear about it in the past. Maybe games that you were not even on your radar, but let's say you like waffles, and then now you know that there's a waffle board game coming up, which seems pretty fun, actually. Maybe you are a fan of Wandering Towers and Wizards, and you know that, well, there's a Wandering Tower game from Capstone Games. Maybe you are a fan of, you know, animals and Wild West. Well, now you know that Wild Tower West is there, because the art is very cute, these animals, so who doesn't like that? Maybe you were looking forward to build another amusement park, and now you know about Funfair. Maybe you were wondering about, you know, pre-Hispanic dungeon crawler games where you can go and get, you know, basically get some spells against you and fight some Serpent Kings. Well, now you know that there's Valley of the Serpent Kings by Flying Frog Productions. Anyway, I hope this episode you had a blast with me. And, you know, once again, I'm going to promise you the same thing, that there's going to be at least 2 episodes per month. In that way, you can enjoy them just as much as I enjoy talking to you on the other side of the speakers. With that being said, like always, until next time, see you through the speaker. And where? Well, of course, at the tabletop. Drink tequila, spend summer at a Mexican bar. Davy Crockett, and I'm driving my car. Maybe life is simple and I'm making it hard. Maybe I should separate my brain from my heart. Drove my motorcycle, breathe fumes on I-65. Every time I think about death, I feel alive. South of the border, you won't have to try. Wide open skies, get away for a while. Remember the Alamo. Driving home on these Texas roads. Go. Nowhere left to go.